Okay, thanks for coming back, Mr. President. My first talk now is going to be if I start talking about stuff. Do you understand it?
It's always about stuff. Okay, this year we've been working on some interesting stuff. In particular, one of the questions, if you were here for BDL's talk, one of the problems that has been persisting for a long time is this problem. Anybody ever walked up and plugged a projector in and had the no input is detected RGB message? Well, this year, fortunately, we come to the rescue. We can actually push a button now, and nothing will happen. Oh, there it goes. Hey, look at that. Okay, it's fancier than that, though. Actually, now have a larger screen. Oh, come back here. So that is the top half of my screen, and this is the bottom half. And if I can take the window up here, I can drag it down so that it's half on the external monitor and half on the internal monitor. So now when I go home, fortunately, I can actually expand my desktop on the fly. And then when I leave again, I just push the magic button. And I can turn it back off again. Beep. Or I can turn it back on again. It's all kinds of fun. So finally, we have the ability to do auto detection and automatic configuration of external monitors. What does this mean here? As you can see from the display up here, I actually list all of the outputs that are present in my laptop. It has three of them. One of them is missing cabling to the outside of the laptop, but is still present. It has a VGA output, it has an LVDS, and it has a TV output. And you can actually control them independently. You can position them independently in the virtual space. Virtual space has a wide range of sizes, and so you can actually do all kinds of fun stuff. But I thought I would do that before I started my talk, because that's a rather common activity. And I actually do have slides. So what am I going to talk about today? I'm going to talk about mostly what I've been doing and what other people have been doing around X for the last year or so since we had LCA in beautiful, did even last year, and we've now moved to beautiful Sydney. It's rough. I tell you, rough to come to Australia every year. They keep asking me, are you sure you want to come back? Yeah. So I'm going to talk about some directions for X, current releases, current release strategies. Etch, obviously, is releasing with Zorg 7.1 bits in it. Zorg 7.2 is not a significant change over Zorg 7.1. The drivers are mostly compatible, so we'll be able to backport drivers and get to Etch looking like 7.2 in short order. After Zorg 7.2 comes out, we're going to do a refresh on the X server itself. Zorg 7.2 will come out with the X server version 1.2. We like having disjoint version numbers because it confuses people. What we're trying to make the different pieces of the system releasable separately. And Zorg is mostly the X server. Most of our work goes into the X server or the drivers. There's a huge amount of effort in there. So right at this point, Zorg releases are closely tied to a particular X server release because most of the work in building a Zorg release is in getting the X server ready to be released. The next release after that is going to be included with Zorg 7.3. We're supposed to be doing releases every 6 months, and if we had been doing a release every 6 months, Zorg 7.2 would have come out last month, and it's still not released now. And then I'll talk about some future plans and some other stuff. But before we continue, I have a Debian packaging problem that I thought maybe you could help me with. I have this package in Debian called fontconfig. One of two packages I maintain. And fontconfig deals with this glorious piece of work that Jocelyn loves called Diffoma. Is that your fault? Oh. Yeah, let it rot. Well, the major problem here is that fontconfig.diffoma is written in Perl. Is that your fault? So I can blame this entirely on you.
Yes.
Excellent. I could attempt.
Before,
Yeah, okay, yeah. Mixing me and Perl is a bad idea because when I program in Perl, your system gets reconfigured in rm-r sorts of ways. And Perl scripts running as root written by me, I wouldn't do that. Currently, all the fonts in the system that Defoma manages get symlinked into varlib defoma fontconfig.d. And this is magic. So the cool thing is that all of your fonts get listed twice, because fontconfig knows where all your fonts are, and then Defoma tells fontconfig where all your fonts are too. So I need somebody to fix fontconfig. Are you volunteering to fix fontconfig.defoma to do this for me? I think the fix should be to have fontconfig.defoma figure out which directories the fonts that you're adding are in, and make sure those are in the configuration.
You follow that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That seems like a good plan. Unfortunately, the way you find out what directories are in the configuration is you parse a bunch of XML files. Does that frighten you with Perl? It doesn't even faze him. I love it. Excellent. Okay, I'm psyched. See, all I had to do was give a little talk, and somebody signed up to fix my problem. So I'll expect that in the mail in the next week or so. Oh, it's a race now. Okay. Yeah. Oops, sorry. Yeah, here's the end of the talk. There we go. Oh, excellent. I had no idea it was going to be so easy. Okay, so as I said, most of the Zorg release actually turns out to be releasing the X server and its ancillary drivers. For some probably slightly crazy reason, we split all of the drivers out from the core server. This was in some fantasy land where you could release drivers separately from the server. I think the kernel got it right, and Adam Jackson is trying to convince me of this, but I'm almost convinced that the drivers should be released as part of the server, because our attempts to retain binary and even API compatibility across server releases doesn't have a great history. It makes it easier for NVIDIA and ATI, who are now my sworn enemies, so it doesn't seem like it's a feature for me. The main thing, though, is that right now it's making it very difficult to release the server because we have ABI issues that we want to figure out what the ABI is for various drivers. So we have some concern about that. Okay, what's in X Server 1.2? It's going to be part of Zorg 7.2. A huge amount of effort went into a large number of bug reports filed by Coverity. So we had a stack of developers pouring over the Coverity reports, and we have maybe as many as 100 bugs that Coverity found in our code fixed for this release. Lots of dead code was eliminated. We even had some Perl developers come in and start using tools like Sparse and GCC to reduce compiler warnings and other obvious errors. For the first time in history, X assumes that your monitor can do DPMS unless you tell it otherwise. I know, it's a big change. It's a big, scary change out there. DPMS has only been a standard since 1993. What? Yeah, if you do DPMS, sometimes it doesn't work. But we assume now that you have DPMS, so that if your monitor does DPMS, we'll turn it off by default. Power save. So if it doesn't do DPMS, the worst that happens is the sync signal gets turned off and it displays nothing. With a non-multi-sync monitor, it would destroy the monitor. So our job here is to make sure that there are no such monitors left in the world. Yeah, exactly. Other things that we're doing, we used to build a whole bunch of libraries into the server and build them custom magic for the server. One of them was libdrm, the library that talks to the kernel module, the direct rendering manager kernel module. We used to actually build that specially for the server because the server is a special place. We switched to a shared one. We're trying to do that with more and more libraries. There's one big one left out there called Mesa. Right now, we currently build Mesa separately for the X server. It's a terrible plan. Eventually, we're going to use the shared one for that as well, but it's a bunch of work. We're doing some refactoring with the security code. A bunch of AIGLX fixes. All told, we changed about 1,800 files. The great news is we deleted 40,000 lines of code. Oh man, did that feel good. More functionality, less code. What could be better than that? Is there a clock down here somewhere? No. Okay. So another interesting change that's going to affect Debian and all you poor Debian users. We're shipping a new version of Xlib with Xorg 7.2, libx11 version 1.1.1. 1.1 wasn't quite ready, so we shipped a mild update for that. Is using now using XCB as its fundamental transport. So if you configure it by default, libx will use XCB as its underlying transport. What does that mean for you? A couple of things. You can now use XCB APIs and Xlib APIs at the same time. So you can take an application that is currently built entirely on Xlib and migrate it over using XCB a little bit at a time. XCB offers significantly better threading integration, significantly better latency hiding mechanisms, and a lot better, a lot cleaner API. It's a much smaller library. When you get rid of Xlib, your program's memory consumption will shrink by about a megabyte, because XCB is 40 kilobytes for the entire library. XCB, unfortunately, the reason this is important to poor Debian users, XCB will catch every locking bug in an extension library, whereas Xlib would not. In a single-threaded application, Xlib would actually disable all locking. So unless you told Xlib that you were running a multi-threaded application, all of the locking in Xlib would be disabled. XCB doesn't ever do that now. XCB always does the locking, because if you don't link in the locking libraries, the locks are really cheap. So at this point, an application like Mozilla, which uses pthreads, doesn't tell Xlib that it's multi-threaded. And so all the locking in Mozilla is disabled. And that's because the locking in Xlib is broken. So they had to do it that way. They tried turning it on. You can actually try telling Mozilla to turn the locking on and watch how spectacularly Xlib falls over. But now that the locking is always enabled, we're catching a lot of bugs. People using Xorg 7.2 are going to be our testers and find the rest of the bugs that we missed. Again, Coverity Love was applied to libx11 as well, so there's a bunch of Coverity stuff down. We're hoping to be able to do a bunch of annotations for the locking stuff so we can use sparse to detect obvious locking problems, especially in extension libraries. And there's a nice optimization for application startup time where your compose tables are now cached across applications on disk. Not a huge change, but the big one here again, all of your extension libraries will now be extensively tested for threading bugs. Aren't you lucky? Okay, after Xorg 7.2 ships, we have a whole bunch of updates to the Xserve that I want to get pushed out reasonably quickly that are sitting around waiting for Xorg 7.2. Xorg 7.2 was supposed to ship in early December, and so there's a whole bunch of code sitting, waiting, that has been sitting for about 2.5 months now, that was going to get landed mid-December. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to refresh the server after Xorg 7.2 ships with probably something called 1.2.1, but of course there will be huge wranglings over what version number to call it, because everybody knows version numbers are important. Yeah. So what we're guaranteeing with this particular one, or at least trying, is to remain ABI compatible with 1.2, so you'll be able to take your old 1.2 drivers and continue using them. So we won't have to refresh the drivers. But what we're going to offer now is we're going to land a huge pile of EXA fixes that we've done over the last month. EXA is now usable. And if you get this particular version of EXA that we're going to be shipping with something called damage track enabled, and you run it with a driver that has EXA memory management happiness in it as well, all of a sudden EXA is actually better than XAA finally. EXA is a new acceleration architecture. It can actually take advantage of all the video memory in your machine. Right now, I can only use a 2K by 2K section of my video memory for everything X does on this laptop with the XAA architecture. So that means I've got 4 million pixels. And if you notice, my screen size is currently 2K by 2K. So I get no off-screen memory at all with this current configuration because XAA can't manage even this relatively modest laptop. So I have, out of my 128 megabytes of video memory, I use 4 meg for X. It's cool. EXA will use all of it, and more. Did I mention the new Intel 965 chipset actually comes with up to a half a gigabyte of mappable address space for your video card? And because of the way we're changing the memory manager, I can actually map different portions of memory into the video card's address space. So I can use all of your memory for graphics now. It's cool. Yeah. I used to think a long time ago that external video memory wasn't all that important because you were drawing all the stuff on the screen. Who cared about external images? Then we did composite. And composite wants more memory than you own. Yeah. Okay, the other big change in this X-Server 1.2.1 is this thing called R&R version 1.2, a minor update that kind of replaced the render extension. Does multi-monitor support the stuff I was showing you earlier, where it can detect dynamically detect which outputs are connected? It will actually, when you unplug this, it can send a signal to your application. Oh, the video went away! And your system can say, well, I better not be using that for output anymore, and turn it off automatically. So that stuff's going to be hooked up and working quite nicely. The other nice thing is you can actually send new mode lines down to the server. You can say, whoa, I have this magic output. I know DDC and EDID didn't work very well. Here's the mode line it wants. Use this one. And you can pump a mode line into the server on the fly and light up an external monitor. You don't have to touch zorg.conf at all anymore. And in fact, until 2 weeks ago, there was no way to configure the system for multi-monitor support except by starting the server and using the extension. So there were significant amounts of capability in the system that were only accessible dynamically, not accessible through the configuration file. It was pretty funny. My coworkers are not amused when they're trying to do static testing. We want to be able to test it. Oh, you have to type this command after the server starts. We don't want to do that. So I added all the config stuff. No, I don't. No, Chinese, actually. Okay, so that's X-Server 1.2.1. What else are we working on? For X-Server 1.3, this will be shipped as part of Zorg 7.3. I don't know if we'll do a release before that. We'll probably release simultaneously. The intent here is to do some two critical pieces of work that are also sitting in the server master right now that are not ABI compatible with 7.2. One of the big ones is PCI rework. How many of you have ever watched your X-Server reconfigure your PCI bus as it starts up? Yeah. Anybody ever wonder what happens when it unmaps your SCSI card and then takes a page fault? Yes, this can happen to you. So we're throwing all that code away. So you're going to see another giant happy delta of code going away. Ian Romanek wrote a new, really simple /sys reading library that goes off and looks at what the kernel says your PCI configuration is and uses that. A relatively straightforward piece of code to do. He wrote an API so that if the Beastie Boys want to go off and make it work on the BSDs, they're happy to do that, but I don't care. Not my operating system, monkey boy. So all of this PCI manipulation is going to exit the X server stage left. Unfortunately, every single driver has to be updated to take advantage of this because they used to do really ugly things. I'm not quite sure what all the updates are, but Ian promised that it was necessary. I believed him. Yeah. The other big change that we're making is... Sorry. Another ABI breakage with all the input drivers is moving away from the static input input configuration to dynamic configuration so that you can add another mouse on the fly. I know, it's a radical idea. What? It works because the kernel supports it, but one of the things you can't do is add a touchpad. You can't add a graphics tablet on the fly. That doesn't just work. You can't add another keyboard on the fly. That doesn't just work. So, and you can't add, you know, space balls on the fly. That doesn't just work. Yes. So the most broken part of the driver system was in the X server, and that's all been replaced. So now the X server has all input hot pluggy happiness as well. The input hot plug is all based on how. So you actually get, the X server is actually told, hey, you want to use this new input device through how. We use how instead of using an extension here because we wanted some modicum of pretend security. And we don't pretend that there's any security through the X protocol. While we do pretend that there is some through how. Or at least if there isn't, it's not our fault. So we get notification of new devices and the server adjusts automatically. One of the cool things is when you plug in another keyboard, and if the two keyboards aren't the same, the server actually flips on the fly between two key maps. It says, oh no, the key map has all changed to this new key map. Oh no, the keyboard has all changed to this new key map. So if you're typing on two keys, your applications are getting hammered with key map notified. Shockingly, with modern CPUs, they work. Not a big deal. Multiple mice and keyboards, and basically anything the X input protocol used to support, and we can now hot plug that and add it on the fly. So that'll be cool. More hot plug sweetness. And another thing, of course, is that you can actually start the server now with no input devices, and HAL can tell it what its input devices are after it launches. So the one of the possibilities here is to actually, in multi-user environments, is to, you know, please type a key on your keyboard. And HAL will say, oh, that's this one, and can plug it to the right system. Anybody know that USB input devices, keyboards and mice, have no unique identifiers? You can't tell which mouse is which unless you ask the user to please wiggle the mouse. It's insane. I know ROMs are really expensive. Oh well. Okay, another big change that we're doing, another thing that we're doing in Zorg 7.2 is we're coupling it with Mesa 651, a 652. There, I put it on the slide. You can read what the numbers are. Don't let me confuse you. Mesa 652 has two big changes. It has all the API support necessary for OpenGL 2.0. So if you have a driver that can support OpenGL 2.0, then Mesa now can support OpenGL 2.0 out to the application space. Seems like a relatively modest piece of code, but it's a huge number of entry points and a huge number of software, huge bunch of software rendering support as well. The bigger change is going to be more visible as we move on in the future is support for a new memory manager architecture. This unfortunately is not compatible with the existing drivers, and I think the Mesa project has made a small mistake in making it possible to build the drivers either way. It requires some cooperation with the X server. So you have to have an X server that understands the new memory manager, and a Mesa library that understands the new memory manager, and a kernel module that understands the new memory manager to get all this new happiness going. So the X server initializes the kernel for the new memory manager, and then the Mesa library can use the new memory manager. What does it do for us? It supports writable objects. With the current Mesa, when you allocate memory in off-screen space for a texture or a vertex buffer or something like that, you have no guarantee that object will exist in any time in the future. It can go away without any warning. As soon as you lose the DRI lock, all of your objects can disappear. You get no warning. So that means you can't put anything mutable off screen. In particular, I just got a bug report last week. A user complained that copy texture rectangle was really slow on our implementation. Why is that? We have acceleration. Well, the reason that copy texture rectangle is slow is because we have to copy it in system memory to shadow the copy that's happening in off-screen memory. Because I can't expect that the update to the texture that's happening in off-screen memory will be preserved across any lock switch. So if I lose the DRI lock, my off-screen contents are gone, all of them, no guarantees. So that means that there's a huge number of operations that you want to be able to do in mutating off-screen memory that we just can't do yet. The new memory manager actually supports the ability to page objects back to system memory and then off to the disk out of video memory. The main thing that it does actually is it supports the ability to use modern graphics cards page table architecture. Any modern graphics card can actually map system memory in through a page table like architecture. Right, so if you want to draw to a new texture, you just allocate the texture in your own memory space and have the graphics card point itself at your memory. And now it can just use that as a texture. That means you're responsible for managing your own memory. Huge advances. Writable textures, frame buffer objects. Unfortunately, every driver has to be naturally changed. And the only driver that this is supported on right now is the 915 driver. But yeah, some of us are winning. Yeah. This work was not done by Intel. This work was done by Tungsten. Tungsten is, of course, most of the major Mesa developers work for Tungsten Graphics, and they do almost all the Mesa core Mesa infrastructure work at this point, and they're working on this piece quite hard because it's very important for OpenGL 2.0 support. Okay, where else are we going? Right, I talked about this already. Actually, there's a worse problem. The worst problem is that memory management is not only does DRI applications lose all of their memory as soon as they lose the lock, there's no unified allocation between X and DRI. So when you start up the X server, you actually partition your video memory into two pieces, well, more than that. You partition it into the piece X owns and the piece DRI owns, and you can't move this boundary. So if you ever want to run a 3D application, you have to allocate some memory for DRI. Even if you only do it like once a week, you have to allocate memory for DRI so that in case you run a DRI application, that memory will be available. So the new memory management architecture is going to allow us to move beyond that. Not only is it going to solve this lack of persistence for objects for DRI, it's also going to allow us to move into an architecture where we can migrate the allocation, basically you allocate pieces of video memory now independently of whether you're the X server or a DRI client. The X server couldn't use the old DRI allocator because it wasn't persistent. But now that we have some persistence here, we should be able to do this. There's some questions I have about how you deal with cards that aren't UMA. All of my cards, all of their memory comes out of your regular system memory. So this ability to just use the page table in the card to move allocations around, that works for me. It doesn't work for cards like the Radeon or the NVIDIA cards that have off onboard memory, where the page table, where the CPU can't touch that memory. I don't know what the Mesa folks are planning in that area. It's going to be interesting to watch and see what happens. What? Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, they're probably waiting for... Are they waiting for you to do it? Okay, they're waiting for Dave to do it. That's Dave Early. He's our resident Mesa and Radeon driver maintainer. Okay, enough about what Zorg is up to. What has Intel been up to? Because that's who I work for these days. The Intel driver, how many of you have Intel graphics chips in your laptop? Hey, it's a good percentage. Why did you buy those laptops? Did you buy them because they had Intel? Or did you buy them because they were cheap? In spite of Intel. They're small. They are power misers, they're inexpensive, and they have open source graphics drivers. What more could you want? It's great. Yeah. Okay, if I look at the bug reports in the existing Intel driver and the complaints that we get on a daily basis, most of the problems that people have with the Intel drivers, while they could be a little more performant, and there's a lot to be done in the software to make that possible, most of the problems people have with the Intel drivers are the problems that BDL had this afternoon. Load setting doesn't work. Load setting is a disaster. Load setting didn't work because of interesting internal Intel politics and how contractors work. The load setting support in the current Intel driver has to use the BIOS for various reasons. There are a lot of actually good reasons to use the BIOS with older versions of this chip. The actual core chip itself, it's a lot like the AC97 audio adventure, where you have AC97, the digital part, being built into the CPU, built into the Southbridge chip, and so the common digital parts of your audio stream are all Intel silicon, and then Intel said, oh, but we don't want to do the analog piece. So we're going to just have this AC97 interface to an external chip that does the actual D to A conversions and A to D conversions. And so a bunch of people built AC97 external chips. Well, the nice thing about AC97 is the protocol specification between the internal chip and the external chip was actually pretty well documented and not all that complicated. Not so with the graphics chip, where we have this single chip that had originally only VGA output. It was the only thing it supported natively. And to get any other kind of output, you had to use this AC97-like kludge called DVO. So the original 830 chipset, in order to talk to your panel in your laptop, had a magic external chip that was using a protocol that wasn't standard. Every vendor of an external chip would make up their own way of doing mode setting with these external chips. It was delightful. So in order for the driver to support a wide range of laptops, the only way to do it was to use code that was known to support that laptop. It was shipped with the laptop. It was in the BIOS. So you use BIOS mode setting for all these Intel laptops, and they work great with their internal panels, as long as those vendors tested them with DOS. Well, DOS was important until about, oh, I don't know, 1995. So we have a relatively long history where people were still testing with DOS until about, no, 2 or 3 years ago. And then the 915 chipset came out, and Windows started supporting things other than simple panel resolutions. And all of a sudden, the BIOS was not cutting it. There would be BIOSes shipped without support for the native panel size in the laptop. And for a million other reasons, mode setting could no longer rely on the BIOS. So we waited pretty much as long as we could and long past when we should to throw away all the BIOS-based mode setting code and replace it with actual hardware mode setting code. It's a huge amount of code because the number of varieties and variants and weird environments the Intel chips are run in. So all of the mode setting code in your existing server is gone, and we have all new mode setting code. It supports Rander 1.2 as completely as I can. It supports all the monitors and all the outputs that any Intel card ever could support as closely as we can, and we keep getting more hardware to test more stuff on. The new driver also does full EXA support on all of our hardware from 830 to 965. Intel is funding all the development and testing on this driver now. We have 6 full-time engineers, 4 development engineers, and 2 QA engineers. No, 3 and 3. Plus me, I don't count on this list, apparently. The goal here is to ship drivers when the chip launches. So if you see an announcement for a new Intel graphics chip, you should be able to go that day to the Zorg tree and download source code for it. More importantly, yeah, I know my screen saved. More importantly, you should actually be able to get drivers from your distribution. If you're using one of the larger desktop distributions, you should be able to get drivers from your distribution on the day the chipset launches. That's our goal. Oh, we aren't going to be able to make it all the time because of the way distribution schedules align with our schedules, but I can tell you that source code is going to be available at day 0. So if you get a new laptop with an Intel chip in it, you can build your own driver, even if your distribution doesn't support it. And maybe we'll even get Debian drivers within a year or so. OK, I got a few minutes left. This is the Intel rah-rah slide. I was watching BDL's talk this morning, and I know I've heard his talk several times, but I didn't realize how deeply it had sunk into me. You can go away now. Because this slide reads pretty much like one of BDL's slides. And this is actually part of Intel's process as well, that we'll be trying to teach to parts of Intel outside of my own little corner of Intel. The goal here, of course, is to join communities and not dump code in the world, right? You don't want to say, oh, we know exactly how to do file systems. Here's a new file system. No. We have developers that work with existing file systems doing things like chunkfs to see how we can improve ext performance. We have kernel developers submitting patches and doing performance analysis on the Linux kernel to see which particular revision in the recent commits caused the performance regression on a particular piece of Intel silicon. We use existing well-accepted licenses. We don't invent our own. Everything we ship in the kernel is GPL licensed without exception, or GPL compatible like the MIT license. All of the X stuff we shipped is under the MIT license. All of our development, at least in graphics-wise, and almost in, almost everywhere else as well, is done in public. So if you look at the wireless drivers, where are they developed? Developed on SourceForge. Okay, not the best infrastructure, but at least it's public. What? Yeah. I'll get to that. All the bugs that we have for our graphics stuff, our internal bug tester, our internal testing QA engineers, post bugs to where? The 3 Desktop Bugzilla, where Zorg bugs are held. All of the code that we develop for the Intel drivers is done directly in the external repositories. We don't have an internal magic repository that we dump code externally to on a regular basis. We don't do that. With the exception of things that we have to, embargo. Our hardware groups like to have details about future hardware hidden from the external prying eyes of our rabid competitors. And we comply with that. It's mostly been harmless. Again, because we ship the drivers at day zero, it's relatively painless. We are able to now actually ship drivers to commercial distributions 90 days ahead of hardware announcement. So we can actually get support for commercial distributions ahead of the hardware availability, which is pretty cool. And we don't provide any binary-only kernel modules. All of our kernel modules are shipped with full source code. I know we occasionally have licensing and regulatory issues, especially with the wireless drivers. And we did work through those. You can now get wireless drivers that don't have a binary-only user space program. So all the binary regulatory stuff for our wireless drivers is now in the firmware that gets dumped into the driver. I wish we didn't have to do that, but if we didn't do that, we would not be able to sell wireless hardware anywhere in the world because Japan would shut us out. So we wouldn't be able to sell our hardware at all. So it's the usual compromise. Let's see, further afield from what's happening further in the future for X, we're going to look at if I can do mode setting in the kernel. Grandeur 1.2 has showed us a lot about what a common mode setting API would look like. I'm going to see if I can't put that in the kernel and see what kind of benefits we're going to get, especially in the areas of suspend and resume support, the ability to do crash recovery, and other kinds of nifty stuff like that. Right now, if you get a panic and you're running X, where does your panic message go? Nowhere. So you can't see anything. One of the hopes here is we'll be able to do the mode setting in the kernel, we'll be able to flip back to a text screen and show you the blue screen with the panic message on it, or black screen, whatever color it is. I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot of people would like to be able to see their panics. We're going to do non-VT-based multiple X session support. Right now, in order to have multiple X servers running, they actually have to be running on separate VTs, which means when you switch, you get a lot of flashes on the screen. It works. We do have fast user switching. It's just not pretty yet. So we can't paint them on sides of the cube and have them rotate between users like other operating systems. Right now, we have very limited support for video decoding acceleration. And before HD content, when we were just talking about DVD resolution, 720 by 480, the CPU was plenty fast. And you would see CPU loads between 10 and 20% for decoding a typical HD, typical standard format DVD. But when we're moving to HD content, all of a sudden our CPUs really aren't fast enough. And so we need to look again at doing hardware motion compensation and IDCT acceleration. The existing extension that we have, XVMC, it's a DRI kind of extension that is really very much targeted at MPEG, and it really does not handle H.264 as well as it should. So we may need to look to a slightly more complicated architecture for that. And of course, world domination is proceeding according to plan. So I have about 5 or 10 minutes for questions. And then we have, who's next? Oh, Russell. Okay. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Yes, you can have them overlapping if you like. Yeah, actually one of the things I'm thinking about adding, just to play with it because it's trivial now, is just to add a projective transformation of the screen. So you can actually take a projective transformation shadow and put that someplace else. So you can create a virtual output that was a projective transformation. Yeah. You can do all of that, of course, with the composite extension. So to a great extent, there's a lot of stuff that you should do with composite that could be done with Rander as well. In particular, picture-in-picture is trivial with composite. So, yeah.
So how about, can you talk about encouraging people to actually use composite?
Oh, encouraging people to actually use composite.
Yeah,
application developers. Well, we've seen a lot of interest in Beryl and Compiz in terms of session level compositing, but in terms of getting application developers using composite, one of the greatest inhibitors for that right now is the poor performance on most drivers. And I think with the ability to push EXA into the driver infrastructure and to migrate drivers over to that, we're going to see the performance problems disappear. And I think that's going to encourage people to try composite and start depending upon it. I hope so. It's been a performance problem. Yep.
So you've got internal like Apple Hotspot, like that USB brand mastermind or Shiba, have new laptop where you've got some light there and prime light.
Okay, so the question is, we have input hot plug and a sort of output hot plug. How about hot plugging output devices? I can hot plug input devices. I can't hot plug output devices yet. There's some fundamental X-server infrastructure that makes it very hard to add a new output device. The output devices are initialized at server startup time, and changing them looks really hard. So that's going to take another major API breakage and a huge amount of work, but it's not ready yet. I'd like to be able to do that, but we can't. And this work doesn't address that. Question? Right. You can initialize anything that's plugged in when the X server starts. So if you shut down the X server and start it up again, I can initialize that. With a reasonable driver, the driver can take the card from power up. Now most of our drivers don't, and getting that working is going to be an adventure. But you can always run a DBE tool. I actually am planning on making that work on the Intel driver as we move the Intel driver into the kernel in this exploratory stage, because that's required for suspend and resume support, because very few laptops repost the video on resume. And so you end up running DBE tool post on your video output, which is not a very reliable way of getting output running again. So having the driver be able to take the output from power up is a key part of making suspend and resume reliable. More questions? Yep.
I understand you can start after, but are there any plans for the tweet video?
Oh, wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, of course I can't answer. Intel product plans that haven't been announced, I'm not supposed to say anything. The question was, what about discrete graphics from Intel? We have basically at this point a sole source for open source graphics drivers for Linux that are commercially supported. And it would be nice if we had the ability to take those chips and put them into other computers. And Intel doesn't currently sell the discrete graphics solution to plug it into another computer. So maybe someday, who knows? Intel sells all kinds of stuff. What? Oh, yeah, the Intel did make a product called the i740 that was a PCI graphics card back in 1997. It's been a long time. Yeah. Other questions or comments? Yeah.
Is that far off from having AMT or the static X-Server console?
AMT? Oh, an empty one. We're getting really close. You don't have to have much there. If you don't have a configuration file, it works pretty well. But as soon as you want to change anything, you have to have a relatively substantial zorg.conf file, because all of a sudden a lot of the defaulting goes away. Isn't that cool? So a lot of our configuration issues could actually be solved by making sure that the defaulting happens even if you have a configuration file. So a lot of that will happen. Yeah, I know. It's like, wait a minute. Why do I have to have this in my config file? It knows these are the defaults. So we're working on it. One more question. Lying how? Yeah. Well, that happens a lot. Actually, I was working with a customer in France, and they sent me these cone-headed monitors. Every single one of them had incorrect EDID information. So it's very common. My plan actually is to do two things. A, you can obviously override the EDID data in your configuration file. You can say, no, you're full of it. Yeah. Use this mode line instead, or use this mode instead. You can do that. The other thing that I'm doing actually is adding quirks to the server to recognize particular EDI data and say, oh no, wait a minute, that monitor's lying. You want to use this stuff instead. And so by adding quirks to the driver, quirks to the X server in the core X server EDID code, we can actually share all of that knowledge across all of our drivers and across all the users with that particular monitor. Are there? Yeah. Cool. Well, one of the problems that EDID data does have that's legitimate is that it can't accurately report monitor with 16 by 9 aspect ratio because the pixel sizes that it has to be multiples of 8 in both directions. And so you can... What? It might well be. So you actually get EDID information that has to be a fiction because EDID is not precise enough to accurately describe the monitor. So yeah, I would love to get a list of monitors and what quirks they have and just start adding them to the server. At this point, I don't think there's any better solution. If anybody else has a better plan. Do you have a plan? Oh yeah, yeah. You can quirk it up the yin yang, and you can also configure it. Yeah. We gotta stop here, guys. We got 2 minutes before Russell's talk, and I know Russell will be ready.
Okay, thanks. Hello?